Good morning. Welcome to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host, and you're listening to a program dedicated to the art and craft and marketing of a millennia-old product, the product being wine, and my guest being Michael Bryan, who has created a very innovative approach to enticing, educating, engaging wine aficionados and wine neophytes alike right here in North Metro Atlanta. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Ron. Good morning to you.
Well, Michael, I want to go back to the let's first offer a overview of what the Vino Venue program, the Vino Venue retail business, and the relationship to the Atlanta Wine School is all about. It's a somewhat innovative concept, and just explain that concept, and then we're going to drill down into its origins.
Sure. So it is sort of a multiple-choice wine experience, and it's a wine emporium of sorts that we wanted to make available to Atlantans. You have the ability to sip, you have the ability to eat, you have the ability to buy, you have the ability to get educated and entertained around it, all under one roof.
Now, Michael, this concept, which we'll detail in a moment, includes not only a retail setting where you can buy wines in a very conventional way. You can come in and if you're knowledgeable, go to a section and pick out a wine or two on your own. You can get some assistance in your selection, much the way you might in one of the higher quality wine emporiums. But you can also taste the product, which is very different than a lot of wine retail businesses where there could possibly be a pouring, but there isn't necessarily a self-serve automated system for being able to try several different wines if you choose to. Tell us about that.
This is a technology that is about 10 years old. It's out of Italy. And the adoption from restaurateurs has been fairly moderate to even slow. And a big part of the reason is it's an enormous investment. When we contemplated bringing in this technology and spending that sort of money as a single location enterprise, it was really unsettling. And we knew that if the machines were going to be used, if they were going to be popular, if people would enjoy them, then the investment would be all for good. But you're just not quite sure in an unproven concept. In hindsight, we wish that we had probably popped in one more machine at this point because they have proven to be so popular. Part of that is the environment that we've set up. It's a place that has sort of a glow in the evening. It has just a great electricity and vibe to it. It's sort of casual, but also sort of elegant at the same time. And the machines are dispersed in a way where the guests are able to mix and mingle, to sort of share the contents of what they're experiencing in a very communal way. And, you know, one of the things that our architect did extremely well for us is capturing my vision of creating an environment around sharing, because wine is at its roots really meant to be shared. The very practice of buying a bottle of wine is so that you have five glasses. It was never intended for, a single serving. It's always intended to be served in multiple shares to multiple people. And so I wanted to set up an environment where people could share the conviviality, the sociality that wine really brings. And by dispersing the machines in this environment the way we did, it allows people to converge on them, because it is self-serve, as you mentioned. People are jumping up from wherever they're sitting to go over and sample and try the different wines. And invariably, they do so with other people around, and then therein lies a conversation that begins. Oh, I noticed that you tried the Camus Cabernet. That's the new vintage, right? So what did you think about that? Oh, that was delicious. I loved it. In fact, what I had before that was this Super Tuscan here from Bulgari. Have you had that one? And it really is a lot of fun for all of us as the staff to see these people commune and mix and mingle, complete strangers. And we know that, you know, it's part of that is the environment, part of that is the wine, and part of that is really just sort of the new technology of these dispensing machines and just sort of the wonderment and the wow that people have, because 9 out of 10 people have never experienced them, and the few people who have typically run across them in a hotel or a cruise ship. Those are the two most prominent outlets for where those machines have really made some groundwork. But again, in the restaurant environment, the adoption has been much slower because it's just an incredible financial investment to have them.
Well, let's talk for a moment about that, Michael. Let's sort of drill down into the hardcore business aspect of making that kind of investment. And if I were a fly on the wall at the time that you may have had any discussions with any of your key staff, your wife who to some extent acts as a partner in the business because she's there with you and helps to create that convivial environment just by being a warm, receptive a person that's there to help you learn how to dispense the wine. And when you thought about this major investment, what kinds of thoughts did you have about – you didn't probably have any data about how something like that could work in a North Metro urban, suburban environment. Did it eventually lead to just a leap in faith?
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, entrepreneurs take calculated risks, and I've been an entrepreneur since my 30th birthday in 1996. So I've had a number of businesses, and you know, one of the things I learned early on is entrepreneurs don't take risks; they take calculated risks. So you try and get as much data as you possibly can. Sometimes your intuition comes into play, and you know, one of the things that I was fairly confident about, given the fact that we already had a 10-year presence, a 10-year run with Atlanta Wine School. We had a great brand, a strong brand, a credible brand. We had a big customer base. We had a good following. We had a strong reputation. And so I knew that people expected us to deliver the wine experience. I knew that. And I was confident in that. And so how we delivered that wine experience was where, you know, I started to make various decisions about where we located and what alcohol licenses we were going to procure. It was important for me to find space in a municipality that allowed me to pour it and retail it simultaneously, because that was part of our business model, and again, that was part of the energy and the environment that I wanted to create, the ability for someone to sit in a comfortable chair with friends and pick up a bottle of wine literally off the shelf, ask it to be opened, and then at the conclusion of the meal, if they or their friends enjoyed that bottle of wine, to be able to retail it, take it home. And so all of that, including you know, doing some calculations on the return on investment of a wine dispensing machine, all of that was taken into consideration. You know, at the end of the day, it's still always a little unsettling because, you know, things turn out sometimes differently than you thought. There's a whole host of reasons for that, as you know, in business. But, you know, eventually you have to sort of go for it and say, we're gonna do this. We're confident that it's going to work. And, you know, and it did. And you know, it's not the pinnacle of the experience that people have, but it is it is clearly one of the pillars of what we sort of stand for. And you know, I know a number of people who come here will come here for different reasons. Sometimes it's the class, sometimes it's the private event, sometimes it's just to get a glass of wine, sometimes it's to eat. But you know, whenever they come, invariably part of that wine dispensing experience rubs off on them, and you know, that's something that they love to share with friends. There was a lot of Christmas gifts this past year around giving cards to the dispensing machines. There was one particular person who, I don't know if they were personal or corporate gifts, but she came in and she bought 30 cards. And, you know, it was a real easy thing to give out. And particularly when, you know, you say to someone, hey, I'm giving you this so that we can meet there together and we can have this experience together. So that's kind of cool.
No doubt about it. In fact, I know that there are a number of personal friends who are somewhat educated wine aficionados who enjoy high-end food and beverage in and around the metro area, who regard your place as just a real breath of fresh air for a variety of reasons, one of them being that you can stop in on a Saturday, taste a few different wines as part of your wine flight, food and wine social afternoon, and you know, it's very relaxed, and it's a little bit different. There are some venues around town that will have some tasting events, but the event at Vino Venue, where you have created a five flight combination of wines that in many cases those of us that have been around the block once or twice are being introduced to for the first time. So it's helpful to have a place to go where you have educated management, ownership in this case, that you're trusting your taste buds to, and you're still getting a chance to try something new.
Yeah, there's a couple things that you mentioned there that I want to touch on. First is that as our roots are grounded in Atlanta Wine School and we stand for vinotainment or entertaining education around wine, we have to make sure that the staff that interface with our customers here in our new in Atlanta Wine School, we have to make sure that those people are sharp and on their toes, and even more so, have some qualifications or credentials around wine. And so, as it turns out of the 16 people that we have here, 13 of them have at least one credential in wine. That includes our executive chef. In fact, she's getting ready to enroll and take an advanced level wine course through us in about a month. And so, you know, it's very important not just to distinguish us from anyone else in the marketplace, but again, to allow our guests to have a really comfortable, meaningful experience around wine and food. And of course, it starts with the people you hire, and so our people are expected to have that sort of acumen. And then once they're on board here, we hone that and we help them develop and grow that further.
You know, we're going to be taking a break here for just a couple of minutes, Michael, but when we come back, let's drill down and talk a little bit about how some of your people very informally help to educate consumers. You know, as you're getting a pour, you learn a little bit about each of the wines at the Saturday event. We're here with Michael Bryan of Vino Venue in the Atlanta Wine School, and we'll be back with Michael right after this break.
Do your children know where their food comes from? At ConnectingFarmToFork.com, there's all kinds of ways to help your child understand how 300 million of us here in America stay nourished, clothed, and healthy. Activities, food facts, and farm visits help young people learn about America's hardworking farmers and have lots of fun doing it. Visit ConnectingFarmToFork.com today for a learning experience that'll really grow on you. ConnectingFarmToFork.com, brought to you by the people who care at Feedstuffs Food Link.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200, or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Michael Bryan, the founder of Vino Venue, a very innovative approach to the marketing and the education associated with wines. There is a 10-year history prior to Vino Venue with the Atlanta Wine School. And Michael, before we drill down, as I suggested we would, into the way that your staff educates people at some of the events, like the Saturday afternoon wine tastings, let's go back and talk a little bit about the Atlanta Wine School and how you came to integrate that educational approach into Vino Venue. And you had mentioned that it wasn't as much of a leap of faith to go from the Atlanta Wine School to Vino Venue as it might have otherwise been without the foundation of the Atlanta Wine School. And I can't agree more. You had a good, strong sense of what your customer would be like, because you already had some of those customers that you helped to educate. But tell me a little bit about that transition and how you came to come up with the Vino Venue concept.
Sure. So let's start with where this evolution began. And the great thing about being in the wine education, entertainment, and evangelism business, which is what we called it for 10 years, is that, again, we were really able to hone our approach of doing events, doing classes, taking people to wine country, and we ended up getting to the point where we were interfacing with about 4,000 people a year in that business. That business had three business lines: classes, events, and travel. And we did that for almost a decade. And when I started looking to expand on that business model, it was primarily as a result of customer requests. It was customers saying, you know, we so enjoy our interfaces with you. We love taking your classes. We love traveling with you. It would be great if you had a place that we could arrive to class early and maybe get a bite to eat or have a glass of wine. Or we really liked those 7 wines that you had in class last night. Where can we buy those? You don't sell them, so where can we find them? And, you know, those requests and comments came one after another pretty repetitively, and to the point where I said, you know, we really need to evolve this concept. We need to involve some other things. And so I did the proverbial sketch on a napkin of the new concept. I presented it to some of our best customers, folks that I had come to know through Atlanta Wine School, develop personal relationships with, friendships with, and they all said, this is not only a great idea, but we want to help you see this to fruition. And so we raised all of the money through sort of a private offering in really less than 90 days. And so at that point, it came down to finding the right space, getting it designed properly, building it out from scratch, and opening doors and you know, moving forward. The fact that we had this 10-year-old entity with its reputation, its very passionate and knowledgeable staff, to sort of pour into this new enterprise, Vino Venue, is what makes us truly unique. Not just different, but absolutely unique. Again, you know, I'm reminded by the fact that anybody can, with, you know, $500,000 or $1 million, can go open up a wine bar tomorrow. Even maybe they append a wine store to it. But what they're not going to have is a 15,000-person subscriber base, with many thousands of those being paying customers, and a concrete reputation around wine knowledge, wine education, and wine entertainment. And so being able to start out day one with as Vino Venue, having had that Atlanta Wine School history and track record and runway behind us, made us poised for success, but it also made us unique in the world of wine, and certainly in Atlanta, and well beyond Atlanta borders. And so, you know, I can't, I guess I can't stress enough that that history, you know, earning a living in education and building an educational enterprise really paid dividends when we opened the doors to Vino Venue. And again, it separates us from anybody out there who simply opens up a wine bar or a wine store.
Well, there's no question about it. The Atlanta Wine School was a foundation that had real depth to it, and dimension. And in some sense, you had the benefit of a crowd-funded startup, but with investors who not only were lending money, but their hearts, their minds, so to speak, their hearts and minds, to an operation that they believed in, so that it had the very best kinds of roots that were cultivated by a following, if you will. And to me, I think you have unlimited potential. Are you aware of any other similar businesses around the country that are doing as well as you are?
Well, let me answer it this way. I mean, we're just finished up our first 14 months in business. And for a first-year enterprise, particularly a concept that doesn't exist, it's not like we can look towards somebody who's, you know, a previous pioneer and say, how did they do, or what are they doing now? That we're in a space by ourselves. So the fact that, you know, we did as well as we did financially, that we're poised to really knock the ball out of the park this year is really exciting. It's exciting to me. It's exciting to our partners, and you know, so we're out there on sort of bleeding edge. And no, there's not another enterprise that any of us are aware of, literally worldwide, that is exactly like Vino Venue. It is absolutely unique. Again, lots of wine bars, lots of wine stores. There's some people who've combined those and put those two entities together, but nobody's taken a wine bar, wine store, and added to it a 1,000-square-foot AV event space with a $100,000 demonstration kitchen for the purpose of doing incredible wine dinners, cooking classes, wine classes, and private wine events. And so when you put all of that under one 4,000-square-foot roof, it makes us very, very unique, and really right now one of a kind, which is why we're excited about expanding this concept, either through organic growth or through franchising or both.
Well, we'll talk about that in a moment, but the question comes to mind. Did you find that you had vendors from early on that were equally excited about the potential as you might have been, that wanted to be supportive as well?
Yeah. This from everybody who's been involved in this has always approached it with sort of anticipation and excitement, and, you know, partly because they thought it sounded like a great idea. It sounded cool. It sounded fun. But it also was, you know, like I mentioned, it was sort of in a space on its own. So I'm sure there was a lot of people who were wondering, hey, how's this going to turn out? Because you know, this guy has thought of an approach to our business that doesn't exist. It's going to be a first time effort, and how's it going to fly? And you know, is it going to perform? And you know, are they going to be able to sustain all of these different business lines that interconnect under one roof? And so I'm sure there was a number of wait and sees out there from people, but you know, we have a great approach to working with our vendors and our wine partners and our food partners. We treat them exceptionally well. We really believe that, you know, by building the partnerships with them, we're going to get the most that they can possibly give us. And we work with a great number. For a shop our size, you know, buying wine from 13 different vendors is a lot. But, you know, we do that so that we can have a highly curated selection of wine. And so we're always hunting through and trying to find the various gems that each of those vendors has.
Now, a lot of businesses that are launching a relatively new concept take much longer than a year, sometimes longer than two, to really get off the ground and to actually become profitable. But your concept really took flight, no pun intended. And when do you think it is that the vendors themselves, the industry, so to speak, really sort of got it and realized this guy has created not only something that's really fresh, but where's he been all of our professional lives?
Well, I think what they recognized fairly early on, and which was quickly proven in their eyes, was the ability for them to take a visiting winemaker, one of their suppliers, you know, winemakers, who is going to be coming into Atlanta, and say we would like that winemaker to visit Vino Venue and to be able to intermingle with your guests, conduct a tasting and presentation, and then at the conclusion of the presentation, if people enjoyed their experience in the wines, be able to buy the wines on the spot. And so almost overnight, the vendors watched this happen, and they were like, wow, that's incredible, and it was so easy, you know, and because what typically happens is, you know, a winemaker does an event somewhere like at a restaurant. The attendees have that experience. They want to purchase the wines, and then the wines have to be purchased at another facility, which might be a good ways away, and may not necessarily be at that facility at that very evening. So it's very disjointed. It becomes a two-step buying process where what we've done is we've collapsed the sales cycle. We've streamlined it down into a single touch point buying process. They come here, they have the experience, they walk out the door with the product.
You've certainly done a great job of integrating that experience, leading to someone who's able to leave the venue with the very wine that they came to appreciate at that event. We're going to be taking a break here. We're with Michael Bryan of Vino Venue in the Atlanta Wine School. We've been talking about the roots of the business, the freshness of the concept, and we're going to drill down into how it is that Michael helps to educate people not only about wine but food and wine pairings right after this break.
This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving three right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gonneau. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host. And we're here with Michael Bryan, the founder of VinoVenue, a very, very innovative concept that integrates the educating of wine consumers with the experience in a very convivial atmosphere where you can taste wines and you can do it informally, you can do it on your own, you can utilize their automated sipping and tasting system. You can meet other people. You can come on a Saturday to one of the informal wine flight events and just have a very pleasant experience and then purchase some of the very wine that you were enjoying while you were at VinoVenue. And we had been talking about sort of the inextricable linkage between the Atlanta Wine School and VinoVenue, because the process of educating wine drinkers has carried over into the VinoVenue concept. And we were talking about relationships with vendors before the break. Michael, I'm wondering, without patting yourself too much on the back here, have the vendors reached a critical mass or a new plateau of understanding to where, again, without patting yourself too much on the back here, you know, you've created something that I think the industry has taken note of. Do you get that sense? Do you feel like you have maybe the special status of the kind of business that they see as really the future of their business?
Well, I don't know about that.
Is that going a little too far?
Well, only because wine is put in people's hands and mouths on a lot of different channels and a lot of different approaches. And you know, our approach is one approach. Our customer is not the only wine customer. There's wine customers out there that, you know, are not going to be connected to us. Maybe because of geography, maybe they're too far away. They're not going to be connected to us because, you know, wine for them is really more of a form of lubrication. It's a 1.5 liter bottle of wine for $8 that's, you know, available on the bottom row of the grocery store, and that's okay. But you know, that is not what we're about. And so what that leaves is, you know, people who are curious about wine, want to learn more about wine. They hear that there's this establishment where you can interface with it on a number of levels. You can get a great bite to eat and have some of that wine with the cuisine. You can attend a class and learn a little bit more about it. You can do a cooking class and understand how not only to prepare a meal or debone a chicken, but also when you sit down and eat it, what are the wines that are paired with the course? What makes them work? Understand how you can replicate that at home. So there's so many different things that people can learn by interfacing with our concept. But I definitely know our strengths and our weaknesses, and I know that, you know, there's certain people out there who, again, wine to them is not an art form, it's not a lifestyle, it's a form of lubrication. It's something that, you know, helps relax them or whatever. And so, you know, they're going to buy their wine at a grocery store, or maybe all they care about is a certain type of Chardonnay and getting absolutely the best possible price that they can on it. So they're going to go to a big box retailer with cold fluorescent lights and high ceilings and a warehouse sort of feel. You know, much like you would go buy your tennis shoes, not from an expert that watches you run and consults you on the right shoe for your gait and your foot, but instead you're buying it from a self-help place in like a Sports Authority or something like that, where you get a great price on it, but you're completely on your own.
Right.
And people buy wine that way as well.
Not all of the wine warehouse customers are going to be Vino Venue customers, but there's definitely a subset, and surely you have noticed that whether in a metropolitan marketplace like Atlanta, whether it be events like Aquavino that bring together a number of vendors and you know, a fairly high-end crowd of consumers, or whether it is the Knights of Wine Society and Harry Kontantinescu, Sabure of Champagne, putting together a champagne event, there's a growing number of higher end customers, and you are capturing a pretty good share of that market. And yet, it's really, in my opinion, only scratching the surface. I think there are a lot of people out there who are high end wine consumers that if you were in proximity, they would be more likely to be customers. And we're talking about you educating a customer that formerly was the wine warehouse prime target and is now gravitating toward being a more educated, selective consumer. So you surely have given thought to this potential for capturing more of that higher-end market share, and the possibility that you could have more than one Vino Venue in a marketplace like Atlanta? Is that a possibility?
This sort of concept would be sustainable in a number of pockets in Atlanta. And so that's one of the charters for me in 2014, is to spend more time working on the business. I'll probably have to work in it and on it. You know, that's the life of a small business entrepreneur. But working on it is going to comprise looking at this from a packaging standpoint. Again, whether we want to open one organically, sort of a second location for us, or whether we want to also entertain the franchising approach, and you know, allow someone to open up and grow our concept, even in, you know, a market outside of Atlanta. You know, it could be Charlotte, could be a Jacksonville, something like that. But you know, one of the things that tells me that this is very replicatable, very franchisable, is there's not a week that goes by that someone doesn't come into this location and ask me or one of my staff, "Wow, is this a franchise?" And so right then and there, they already seem to think that, you know, it has that capacity, that that ability to be replicated.
And are you finding that you're already having to immerse yourself in the hardcore data and the numbers crunching associated with expansion of company-owned versus or alongside of franchise operations? Because there are a number of successful businesses that have both corporate and franchise operations operating side by side, and you can determine that in a variety of ways. I could imagine a handful of major marketplaces starting in the Southeast where you had company operations, and then just outside those major corporate marketplaces, there were somewhat more suburban franchise operations or some variation on that theme. So are you entertaining the possibility that you could have both?
Yeah, we are, and we still have a lot of data to crunch, and many more steps to take before we have any level of confidence or execution in that regard. So we're really just at the forefront. We've spent the last year really just kind of figuring out on, again, a brand new concept, you know, how to make this thing really sing, and where do our customers interface, and what are our fastest growing business lines, and where do we need to make improvements, and how do we track expenses? You know, again, this isn't just a wine bar or a wine store. You know, when wine gets purchased here, it gets poured at the bar, it gets put into an Enomatic machine, it goes for a private event for a corporation, it goes for a wine class, it goes out the door in the form of retail. So tracking all of that is quite a task, and the same goes for our food. You know, the food it has almost as many outlets or uses, and again, that's very unique, and that is much more complex than your typical single location place.
Yeah, there's no question about it. The nature of this business, much like a restaurant. Is that integration of art and science, of good taste, and the metrics associated with business in general. And you do strike me as someone who is calculated, very calculated in your risk-taking. So I can't imagine you making a hasty move. And I, for one, don't want to put the horse before the cart, but it does seem to me that you will be increasingly immersed in crunching the numbers associated with opening up store number 2, number 3, number 4, and in franchise operations any day now, just because I think you have created a concept that's in the right place at the right time, and the right place, in my opinion, is the globe, if you will, but certainly the metro area, the southeast, and the rest of the country, for starters. Michael, let's back up and talk about how you came to even be not yet talk about little Michael Bryan growing up with any sort of aspirations in general, but getting involved in this industry. Let's go back 10 or 11 or 12 years to what led you to the Atlanta Wine School.
Quite simply, I had a great experience in one of the companies that I owned, and when I say a great experience, I had a great monetary experience. I owned a staffing company in the late 90s. You may remember the economy was the best it's been in my lifetime so far, anyway, from 1996 to 1999. And during that time, I owned a staffing company. I took it and grew it fivefold in revenue, sold it, and that transaction was consummated in December of 99. So I literally sold it at the peak of that economy. I got a great valuation on the business. I was 33 years old and was technically, at least on paper, a millionaire. Decided I was going to want to get into the fast-moving internet business, and thought that would be really exciting, thought that I would be very talented at it, and move my family back to Atlanta from Birmingham, and got into an enterprise that, like a lot of internet plays, made sense at the time, but really just were not sound concepts, particularly as the economy very quickly changed in 2000. And so that concept failed. I lost pretty much everything. It even precipitated a marital change. And so what started out the year 2000 with a lot of hope, a lot of promise, excitement, and a lot of money. By the time I finished 2000, I was low on hope. I had no money, and I was wondering what I was going to do. So I hired a business coach, a success coach, someone who, ironically, is one of my business partners today, 14 years later. And one of the things that came out of in working with her was that wine was a passion.
Let's take a break here, Michael. We're gonna come back in a couple of minutes and pick it up right at that point, because we're talking about you leveraging your passion, something you had alluded to outside of the program, and I want to hear more about it, and our listeners do as well. We're here with Michael Bryan of Vino Venue. We've been talking about wine and his very fresh approach to the marketing of wine. We'll be back with Michael Bryan right after this break.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
This is Peter Wallace, inviting you to listen every Sunday morning to Day One with inspiring preachers from America's mainline churches on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Put our resources. Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Michael Bryan, and we've been talking about his very fresh approach, the Vino Venue, to marketing of wine in a variety of ways. It to me represents a really nice balance of art and science. He's created a very social, convivial atmosphere here in North Metro Atlanta, and we've been talking about the roots to how Michael came to the business that 10 years prior to Vino Venue was with the Atlanta Wine School. But even before that, Michael was sharing with us some of the trials and tribulations of being an entrepreneur. And many people that listen to this program who are entrepreneurs or thinking of becoming entrepreneurs have heard that the average entrepreneur and the number fluctuates. It could be 5, 6, 7 times before you really get off the ground, but that still means it's an average of 3 or 4 in many cases. And Michael, I don't know that you actually undertook that many different projects, we'll call them, or did you?
You know, in terms of success failure, I've definitely had both. And you know, when I started evolving into the wine business, again, it was a sort of as a result of me identifying this as a passion. And you know, my business coach, I'll never forget, she as I had a little apprehension in sort of moving from white collar business into, you know, something that was very creative. Something that I had a lot of energy and excitement and passion around, but I didn't have a lot of knowledge and I had no experience. And she said, what have you got to lose? Go stand in your passion. You know, you have a lot to share with people. You know enough to be dangerous, so just go stand in your passion. And she was right. You know, if it didn't fly, if it didn't work out, if I wasn't good at it, if I wasn't successful, I could have always gone back to corporate America and done something similar to what I had done previously. As it turns out, I was good at it. I found that I had a knack for it very quickly. My wife, you know, in watching me take on this new endeavor, said, I think you're onto something here. I think that we need to allow you to do this, even though we know that your earnings are going to be impacted for probably a number of years. You know, I'm behind you, and I think this is something that we need to let you do. And I'm glad that I had her support. Spousal support as an entrepreneur is very key. It's very important. There's a lot of great ideas that never make it to market because the people that you support and live with aren't behind it or don't support it or believe in it. And so in my case, I had the support. And literally, we just watched, you know, 1 year after the next Atlanta Wine School grow and grow, and not just from a revenue standpoint, but from a reputation, from a credibility. And all the while, my own presence is growing. There's nothing like teaching. You learn in really an exaggerated way, in an exponential way, when you are responsible for teaching other people. And, you know, as I look back now, and I had to actually come up with this metric a number of years ago, but I don't even know where I am in 2014, but probably as of 2009, 2010, somewhere around then, I had done over 1,000 presentations on wine. And so I'm, of course, well beyond that now, but, you know, it's something that I easily do 100 or more a year. Even with me running Vino Venue now, I still teach a lot. I taught a class last night. I'll be teaching an all-day class tomorrow and an all-day class on Sunday. So I'm doing a lot of that with students, with customers. And when you teach, you know, it requires an enormous amount of preparation and pre-thought. And, you know, that is what keeps me really sharp and on the edge in this business. Is because I'm continually in a teaching capacity.
Well, in fact, I would imagine that the staff of 16 that you talked about, and I did say we would come back to talk a little bit about how the staff is in a constant educational mode. I would assume that you have helped train them all. So that you have a much better than average educated staff that in turn can educate the consumers. I really got the impression from a couple of the Saturday tastings that I was learning with each pour a little bit about each wine in a really relaxed setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that we do exceptionally well. Our Saturday gatherings are really different than anybody else's that I know of. One, you know, it's just the caliber of wines that we're pouring behind the bar. Two, it's the cuisine and light bites and stuff that we offer, all-inclusive for that price. And three, again, it's the people behind the bar. It's the folks that are pouring the wine for you. And it takes, you know, again, not to toot our horns, but it takes some experience and some skill and some confidence to pour, like in my case a week ago, pour 7 or 8 sparkling wines for 60 people. So, you know, 8 times 60, what is that, 480? So that's almost 500 pours that you do in the span of 2 hours. But each time you pour and you dialogue and you interface quickly but effectively with that person, you know, that's a touch point. And so, you know, you can't sit there and have a 5-minute dialogue with them. You don't have time, but you know how to net down and encapsulate that wine that you're pouring into a 10-second or a 15-second description that's meaningful to them, that, you know, gives them enough information so as they're tasting that wine and enjoying it, they can decide whether that's something that they want to take home with them. And so I think that's something that we've learned how to do very well.
No, there's no question about it, at least from my experience. Who helps to put together the various wine flights and the food and beverage pairings?
That's really going to be driven out of 3 key people on the management team. That will be my manager, Rob Van Leer. That will be my executive chef and culinary events director, Jessica Ray, and myself. All of us are very knowledgeable about food and wine. We're very passionate about both. We have collectively we have a lot of experience in those areas, and so when we, you know, decide to go about doing something, we really know how to do it right. And so, you know, a great example of that would be our five-course New Year's Eve dinner that we conducted just this previous Tuesday night. That was really a masterpiece in terms of the quality of cuisine that people enjoyed, as well as the wine choices that we made. And so the net-net was that people had a fantastic time. It was very successful in terms of the sheer number of people that we brought in for that. And, you know, a lot of amazing comments. Some of those were face-to-face and in person. Some of them were put on our Facebook page. Some of them were put on Yelp. So it's great to be involved in something where you architect a great experience. You execute it, I want to say flawlessly or perfectly, but you execute it very well. And the customers really enjoy it. They felt like they got a value. They want to tell their friends. And, you know, that's something you want to do every day, right?
Well, no question about it. And, in fact, I don't want to be remiss in pointing out to listeners that they could learn more about Vino Venue by going to www.vino-venue.com. You can find out where it is in the North Metro area and get to it very easily off of 285, the perimeter, which circles the Metro Atlanta region. Also, Michael, it would seem to me that the New Year's Eve event would simply represent the most recent height in a series of plateaus where Vino Venue is getting better and better at food and wine integration. And I really have many questions about the nature of the business, the promotion of the business, the selection of the wines, the vendor relations. But I want to just kind of ask you a couple of personal questions, like what's your personal preference, full-bodied and complex or light, crisp?
That's real similar, Ron, to another question I get is, what is your favorite wine?
It is. It's exactly that question.
And I get that a lot, and, you know, I know I'm going to disappoint people with my answer. I don't have a favorite wine. And in fact, my personal theory around people's favorites, if you will, are really not so much the wine itself, but it is the ambiance, it is the place, it is who they're with, it's the time in their lives, it's the day that they've had. You know, it's all of that in summation with the wine. The wine is sort of along for the ride. The wine happens to be there at the right place at the right time. And, you know, all of that collectively encapsulates a memory of a great experience. When you look at it from that standpoint, I have a wonderful list of memories, wonderful list, and all of those are great stories in themselves.
There's no question about it. I knew that it was a rhetorical question because, you know, the full end of the spectrum is what I appreciate about wine from light to full-bodied. Michael, I want to thank you for taking the time to be my guest on the Business Hour.
It was a pleasure being here, Ron. I hope that people got some wine knowledge and some passion and business owners got a little faith in how that they're going to approach their own businesses. It's, you know, it's always fun and a little scary when you're launching a brand new concept.
Well, it is scary, and you've done a great job with your concept. Thank you again. You've been listening to America's Web Radio and the Business Hour. That's on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m., Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the radio next week.